pick, every play, every game-changing moment. This is You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
Welcome back. It is hour number three of You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM. Femi Ebefe alongside PJ Glasser. PJ doing an awesome job filling in for Nick Kostos. Nick will be back with us tomorrow after some much-needed time off. I will be taking time off starting tomorrow. So Nick and I just missing each other, but we'll be back together next Wednesday as we celebrate week one in the National Football League season. I'm going to Cabo. Nice. I'm doing it.
Never going, been. Going to Cabo. Have you ever been?
Yes, I went for my brother's bachelor party in 2019. We were in Cabo. A little bit of a different pace this time. We're going for my parents' 40th anniversary. They're going to renew their wedding vows. So their anniversary is on August 31st, thus Labor Day weekend. Of course, a big weekend for my family every year, but 40th anniversary. So congrats to my parents in advance. I don't know if they're listening because they're already there. I doubt they're listening right now. but yeah, that's what we're doing down there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Already checked into the flight earlier this morning. Got a bunch of errands I need to run after the show today. But it's all good problems since this time tomorrow, you'll be seeing me chilling by the beach, baby. I'll be kicking it.
Is that a direct flight?
And that's where I'll be at.
Do you have
No, unfortunately, it's weird. So at certain points in the year, there's a direct flight from Vegas. But I guess in the summertime, there's not. So I actually have a layover in San Francisco. So I'm like going like backwards. Going from Vegas up north to San Francisco and then down to Cabo. So it doesn't make any sense. And on the way back, my layover is in Phoenix and then go from Phoenix to Vegas. So a little bit of an annoying development, but hey, you know what? You take the good with the bad. And the good will definitely outweigh the bad and the minor inconvenience of there being a layover. But enough of that. Let's get into what we want to talk about here to begin this third hour. Oh, by the way, want to let folks know, make sure you stick around. 1 hour from now, Herm Edwards, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us to break down all the happenings from NFL Cutdown Day, as well as the Kansas City Chiefs. Does Travis Kelce still have gas left in the tank? It sounds like it might be his final year, the way he's talking. Didn't want to go out with that blowout loss to the Eagles in the Super Bowl. We'll get Herm Edwards' thoughts in about an hour. 20 minutes from now, we'll be joined by our baseball aficionado, Jay Kassan, to break down the MLB awards. We got an updated AL MVP poll from MLB.com, and boy, there is a development in that market and said poll where Cal Raleigh is now leading. No longer Aaron Judge. Judge was a leader all throughout the season, but Cal Raleigh has surpassed the reigning AL MVP. Will he win it? About 4.5 weeks to go. We'll see if he can hold on to that bad boy. We'll break all of that down coming up in about 20 minutes. But PJ, we've had a lot of news over the last about 40 minutes in the NFL. Cutdown day, teams had to be down to 53 players by 4 o'clock Eastern. But now a lot of the reporting of said players who unfortunately have been waived is starting to come out. And we're actually going to start with some guys who were not released, but that's definitely newsworthy based on the roster moves that were made. And we'll start in Cleveland, where we've been talking about the Browns quarterback competition and the controversy or whatever the hell you want to call it all throughout training camp and in the preseason. Based on the reporting that was out there in training camp, I don't know what people were watching, because once we got to the games, it was a lot different, because Dylan Gabriel will be the Browns QB2 this upcoming season. He'll be playing behind Joe Flacco. So Gabriel, second in command. Shedeur Sanders will be an emergency third quarterback. So he'll still be able to dress on game day, but he's only going to be able to play if both Flacco and Gabriel were to get hurt in a game. The NFL wants to avoid what happened in that NFC title game a few years ago when Christian McCaffrey was one of the Wildcat at quarterback when Brock Purdy blew out his elbow in that NFC title game. So Shedeur Sanders can dress and be an emergency QB, but it'll be Dylan Gabriel, the third round pick, as the QB2, which makes a lot of sense based on what we've seen over the last about 8 to 10 days coming out of Cleveland.
Definitely. I mean, Gabriel has looked like the more polished, the better NFL quarterback up to this point. So don't think it's too much of a surprise. Probably going into the process, I certainly thought Shedeur would be QB number two. He was given opportunity to be quarterback number two. But with the way that last preseason game went, Femi, I think they were already leaning towards Gabriel, and that was just kind of solidified it pretty much for them putting Gabriel at QB2. Shador took 5 sacks. He was running around. He did not make good decisions with the football. And Gabriel was great. So I think it was an easy decision for Cleveland to go with Dillon Gabriel as quarterback number 2. I do think we're going to see him at some point, for sure, because we know Joe Flacco is not the long-term answer. The Browns are going to be one of the worst teams in football. I think they are going to be the worst team in football. They got a brutal stretch to start the season. So it's going to get ugly fast in Cleveland. And I think we're going to see Gabriel sooner rather than later. And definitely the right choice, for sure, to go with him over Shador as we continue to build up this narrative with Shador. Maybe he's not getting a fair crack in the NFL, but the Browns made the right decision. He's absolutely looked like the better quarterback. And Femi, we've talked about the Browns earlier. I think we're probably going to see him. We talked about the Saints earlier, maybe when we're going to see Tyler Shuck potentially in that like week 6, 7, 8 range. I think it's probably going to be about the same for the Browns. They get 3 NFC North teams the first 5 weeks. They get the 6 weeks. They get the Ravens. They get the Bengals. So they're going to be big dogs in a lot of games. And I think about week 7, week 8, it's probably when Cleveland ends up making a change.
Yeah, because I know they have to go overseas to take on the Vikings. Yep. I think it'll be definitely after that game. So I agree, probably some point in October, mid to late October, you see Dillon Gabriel. If it ever happened earlier, look, man, like there's some pretty big prices on Dillon Gabriel to be the offensive rookie of the year. Now, I would never bet this. I'm not recommending it, but I'm just pointing something out. Over at BetMGM, Shador Sanders is 60-1 to be an offensive rookie of the year. Dillon Gabriel, 80-1. Does that make sense? Like, one guy is ahead of the other on the depth chart, but in the betting market, one guy has a shorter price than the other. Like, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I'm not saying to bet Dillon Gabriel because like he doesn't have a path to the field right now, but like let's say Flacco gets injured in the first couple of weeks, or it looks so bad to where they just say, you know what, screw it, let's just put Dillon out there in like week 3. That's a price that's going to shorten quite a bit. So just something to keep in mind with this Cleveland Browns situation. There's no reason why Shador Sanders should be 60-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year when Dillon Gabriel is literally ahead of him in the depth chart and will play on the field before Shador does. So Gabriel will be your QB2 in Cleveland. I think we're going to see all 3 guys at some point because I think all 3 of them are bad. But for sure, it'll be Flacco, then Gabriel, I'm assuming, at some point in October. Then maybe Shador Sanders as a nice little Christmas gift for everybody on Twitter that clamors for him to go out there and get the best opportunity possible. Let's get to the news in Atlanta, though, PJ, because this is a big one. The Atlanta Falcons offensive line is under siege right now. Like, the injuries are mounting, and the big news today is that their right tackle, Caleb McGarry, will be on season-ending IR due to a knee injury that he suffered at practice. This is really important because McGarry, as the right tackle, is the blindside protector for left-handed Michael Penix Jr., who is now taken over as the full-time starter behind center for the Falcons. I don't know how you spin this as a positive for Atlanta. This is a team that I've been bullish on to win the division. I'm not all the way removed from that because you look at their main competitor, Tampa Bay. They also have offensive line injuries as well. But there's no good way to cut this one up with McGarry done for the year. And Storm Norton, their swing tackle, he's out for 2 months. So this is going to be a really banged up O-line to start the year. And maybe a prime opportunity for Atlanta to kind of get a leg up on Tampa ends up being missed next Sunday when they host the Buccaneers to start the season. So a bad, bad development here for the Atlanta Falcons as they lose their right tackle for the rest of the season.
I mean, that really is brutal. Because going into the season, Femi, I'm looking at PFF's rankings for offensive linemen. They have Atlanta at number 8, right? So a top 10 unit, pretty strong. One of the strengths of their team, losing Penix blindside for a guy who's really not all that mobile either. That is definitely a big loss. And you mentioned it. I mean, getting 2 divisional opponents in the first 3 games, that's going to be tough. I think what maybe helps them is the fact that they have an early bye week in week 5. So now they're trying to shuffle it together. They're trying to figure out ways to make the O-line better with the loss of their right tackle. And I think having that early bye week, they can maybe reassess after the first 4 weeks. And they don't play against like the greatest defenses. You know, Tampa, Carolina, Washington, certainly not all that great before the bye, and then they take on Buffalo and San Francisco. It's just, it's tough because Atlanta, obviously, they build their team to have a good offensive line. They know they have a pocket quarterback. Penix isn't all that great of an athlete, certainly compared to a lot of the other quarterbacks that we have in the NFL. And not only that, they want to run the football. They have one of the best backs in the NFL in Bijan Robinson. So it really hurts their team with the offensive lineman injuries that they have had. I don't really have a strong stance on Atlanta, Femi, to be honest with you. I kind of think they win the division just because. I certainly don't want to bet the Saints. I think the Panthers... Yeah, I am out on Tampa. I am out on Tampa. I just don't think they can strike gold with three straight offensive coordinators. You know, Canales and Baker were great. Liam Cohen and Baker were obviously great. I just don't know if they can do that three straight years. Baker, I thought, was going to regress a lot last year, and to his credit, he was terrific. And now they went out and got Emeka Ebuka, and by all accounts, he's been awesome. Mike Evans just never ages. They're going to get Godwin back at some point. So the offense should be good. I think their defense is going to take a step back. And talk about O-line injuries. I mean, they're going to be dealing without Wirfs to start the season. So that is also going to be a big blow for Tampa Bay. This is just one of those divisions. It's funny. The two South division, Femis, for me, the AFC South and the NFC South, I kind of like the Texans by default. And I kind of just like the Falcons by default, especially at the plus 220 price. But these injuries to the offensive line, they do hurt them big time and puts more pressure on Michael Penix, obviously, as a young quarterback to kind of make the best of what you have, you know, and overcome those offensive lineman injuries. So they'll definitely be leaning on Bijan early. I would like some props with Bijan early in the season. To take some pressure off of Penix and that offensive line. But I think getting that early bye week definitely helps them. Play the first 4 weeks of the season, see how the offensive line goes, and kind of make adjustments along the way to try and make the best of the situation that you have.
Yeah, Robinson will certainly be the bell cow on that offense. 15-1 to win Offensive Player of the Year. A lot expected of him, a lot expected of Drake London. Some stuff is expected of Kyle Pitts. I'm not going to fall for the trap. I know Michael Penix Jr. has been saying that he wants to make a concerted effort to get him the ball. Great. So did Kirk Cousins. So did Desmond Ridder. So did everybody else before you. And it didn't work out. So maybe Penix is different, but I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for the Kyle Pitts breakout season, because if you've been doing that, you're probably 6 feet under. Let's get to some other news in the National Football League. The New England Patriots cutting their former first-round pick, offensive lineman Cole Strange. Strange started 29 games for New England, was a Belichick draft pick, and Bill sent this to us via text message, and I thought it was actually a very damning fact for Bill Belichick and how things kind of ended for him in New England. But the last remaining player for the 2022 Patriots draft class is third-round pick Marcus Jones, who's a really good player. Like, I like Marcus Jones quite a bit. Good corner, good return man. But Cole Strange, he's gone. Tyquan Thornton's gone. Jack Jones is gone. Pierre Strong, Bailey Zappi, and a host of other names that I don't think anybody would ever remember. Only one draft pick remaining from that 2022 class is Cole Strange, waived by Mike Vrabel and the New England Patriots. Strange, I think, is a starting caliber offensive lineman. I'm sure somebody will claim him off waivers and try to bolster their O-line. But the O-line, it's a little bit of a youth movement in New England. Do you think that that works for the Patriots in year one for Mike Vrabel and year two for Drake May, most importantly?
I don't know. I mean, they had the worst offensive line in the NFL last year, and they're doing their best to address that. And, you know, part of the reason they probably got rid of Strange was because he contributed to them having the worst offensive line. But again, find me, that's why I'm just not buying into this big jump for the Patriots. A four-win team last year, now their win total's at 8.5. You can't understate, I mean, the upgrade at coach with going from Gerard Mayo to Vrabel, and now a full year of Drake May. I'm just not as high as everybody else seemingly is on Drake May. I don't think he's quite arrived. Like, I don't look at him and be like, the Patriots have found their guy, at least not yet. And as much as I love Vrabel, and, you know, there's some stuff to like about that offense along with Drake May. Everybody's loving Travion Henderson, right? But, I mean, that offensive line is still a real work in progress, and their defense is good. I wouldn't consider it like a top 10 unit. So I just think the Patriots as a whole are extremely overrated, and I certainly think they have some work to do on this offensive line. Will Campbell, by all accounts, looks like he's going to be the real deal. We'll see how he turns out to be. But yeah, man, I'm down on the Patriots. I'm not as high as everybody else is. Like, for a team to be favored in zero games last year, and now they're favored in 11, off of what? Like, I don't get that. So I'm
Vrabel
down
voodoo.
On the Patriots. I mean,
yeah, it's Vrabel voodoo. When they hired Mike Vrabel in January, I said I was going to be in on New England. I thought I was going to be alone. Everyone's in on this team. So the win total, which was once 7.5, now 8.5. The improvement's already baked in. I think you're flipping coins at this point. Not to say they can't be good, but just something I probably wouldn't bet ahead of this regular season. All right, we'll turn our attention to the Diamond, breaking down Major League Baseball awards with our guy Jake Hassan next here on You Better You Bet.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Let's get back to You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network.
Let's get back to You Better You Bet here on the BetMGM Network. Femi Abebefe alongside PJ Glasser, the Glass Man. We've been hanging out here on this Tuesday. 40 minutes from now, we'll be joined by ESPN's Herm Edwards to break down all the biggest stories in the National Football League. But right now, PJ, I wanted to get to a little bit of baseball because, boy, the baseball awards. It feels like when you close one book, another book opens. And last night, we saw a big, big shift in the American League MVP market. Now, over at BetMGM, this is funny because earlier this morning, Aaron Judge was the minus 160 favorite. Cal Raleigh was even money. The two of them now, co-favorites at minus 110. And this is coming off Cal Raleigh hitting another homer last night to now have 50 home runs, the most ever by a catcher in a regular season in Major League Baseball history. At FanGraphs, if you want to be in those streets, Cal Raleigh tied with Aaron Judge when it comes to wins above replacement, something that's really, really important for winning most valuable player. And then the biggest nugget of them all, the MLB.com MVP poll that came out late last night, earlier this morning. And the poll is as follows. Number one, Cal Raleigh, with 22 of the 37 first place votes. Aaron Judge came in with 15 votes. He's at number two. Bobby Witt Jr. third. Jose Ramirez fourth. Tarik Skubal is at fifth. But Cal Raleigh, for the first time this season, has passed Aaron Judge in the eyes of would-be and voter-adjacent people so far here with 4 weeks to go in the regular season. I want to bring on our baseball aficionado, Jake Hassan, because we've been talking about this awards market off and on. Like, when Judge got hurt, we talked about it. Judge came back, hit a home run, and said, all right, we're probably just back on track with Aaron Judge. But Judge continues to kind of just be mediocre. And Raleigh, even though he's below average in terms of, like, batting average standards for MVPs, the guy's hitting home runs every night and appears to be out of his power slump and is now back to being the big dumper. This, I think, because I said this earlier this season, where I was like, all right, I think that Cal Raleigh can actually finally win this award. Now it feels like it's real, now that we're heading towards September and people are out there saying, hey, it's Cal Raleigh who's the MVP, not Aaron Judge, with Judge struggling since the All-Star break. How do you square this up with at BetMGM right now? We got pick'em prices between the two candidates, Jake.
I can't really disagree, right? Like, I mean, the poll tells you everything you need to know for the most part. I think it's right, because I don't think Judge should be a plus money price, because people are just going to bet that. And if he goes back on a heater, he does probably win. But I had been saying, oh, well, if Cal Raleigh's only going to hit home runs but still hit, you know, 180 the rest of the way in the second half, then Judge probably wins as long as he keeps up this historical season that he's got going on. And then Judge decided to just suck. So that definitely helps Cal Raleigh, because while Cal Raleigh's not hitting for average, he's at least hitting for homers still, and he now has the single-season record by a catcher for home runs. So Judge isn't doing any of that. Judge is not hitting for power or for average, and if that's what it's going to be, then, yeah, I think Cal Raleigh should be able to win this award, especially if he gets to 60. And it, by all means, it looks like he is going to get to 60, if not eclipse 60, maybe eclipse Judge's record. So I think Cal Raleigh definitely could win this, but I don't think it's over by any means, because all it takes is Judge to get back on track, to start being Aaron Judge again, and then he takes the driver's seat back.
So yeah, I guess from a betting standpoint, like, would you like? Is it just too much time right now to bet Cal Raleigh? Because like, that's the fear. If you bet Raleigh at -110, it's like, okay, like, I'm entering into the market, I'm betting Cal Raleigh. And then all of a sudden, in 2 weeks, Aaron Judge hits 4 home runs, and you're like, rut-row, Shaggy, what the hell just happened? Like, at what point would you feel comfortable betting Cal Raleigh? Like, would it have to be 3 weeks from now, once we get to mid-September? Is it final week of the regular season? When would you want to get involved? Because like, that's the whole tricky part about this. 3 weeks from now, Cal Raleigh -110 might be -1,000 if Judge continues to kind of slump here.
The first number that popped into my head, Femi, was 2 weeks. Like, 2 weeks from now, I think. Once we're about a week into September, I think that's probably the point. It's also, there are other things that are factored in here. If the Mariners come back and win the American League West and win that division, Cal Raleigh's getting a lot of that credit. And we know how baseball voters are. We know that they vote with semantics sometimes. It's not just the numbers game. And if the Yankees aren't going to win the American League East and just be a wild card team, I do think that some of these voters are going to say, all right, well, we're going to give it to Cal because that's value. You led them to a division crown. So I want to say 2 weeks, but if we're being honest, Judge probably only needs 3 weeks left in the season, 4 weeks left in the season, because we've seen the heaters he can go on, and he could close that gap, or he could take the lead here. And just like if Cal Raleigh takes the Mariners to a division title, the voters are going to give him credit for that. You always have the New York Yankee bump too. So that's something that you have to kind of think about.
Yeah, and PJ, we had Robert Flores on with us yesterday of MLB Central on MLB Network, and he said that he felt that Judge was still the front runner, but only by a slim margin. I guess where I get concerned with Aaron Judge is that while there is the Yankee bump and the New York bump, there's also a little bit of voter fatigue. And Aaron Judge just hasn't really excited people over the last like 5 to 6 weeks, whereas Cal Raleigh is doing exciting stuff every night with like, oh, like, when do you see switch hitters hit 50 home runs? When have you seen a catcher hit this many home runs? Like, the narrative and all like kind of the gray area stuff feels like it's pointing in Cal Raleigh's direction, and Judge would strictly have to be numbers, where he does surpass Raleigh in all the numbers outside of home runs. But like, I think if Raleigh continues to put up that big number, like say he gets like 59, 60 home runs, especially 60, I don't think there's anything Judge can do at that point. I think Judge just loses, which sounds insane to say out loud because he's like the way better player. But Cal Raleigh's having a special season for a team that's fresh and new and a lot of people are excited about, as opposed to what's going on right now in the Bronx, even though they've been starting to play much better than they were 3 weeks ago.
You know what's crazy? It feels like for the first time, I mean, in a while, like, you just get the sense that voters actually want Raleigh to win this award. You know, like Jake was talking about the Yankee bump. Like, it's the same thing with Ohtani, right? It always feels like you're always trying to beat those two guys, and you got to consider they're the two faces of baseball. They play for the two biggest brands in baseball, and it's really tough to beat those two things. And even when PCA was going crazy, right, or the last couple, it just never felt like you got the vibe that like voters actually wanted those guys to win it. But Femi, for everything that you said, it feels like they want kind of Raleigh to win it now. Like, they're just not talking about Judge like they used to. And he got off to such an absurd start, and the Yankees were playing great baseball, and then they started struggling, and Judge hasn't quite been the same. I mean, he's still putting up great numbers. He's batting .323. He's first in OPS in all of baseball. He's still leading the sport in WAR. So, like you said, he's still leading in a lot of categories, but you're just seeing things with Raleigh that you've never seen with the catcher. And I think in baseball, more than other sports, when you hit certain target numbers with homers, it's just like hard to overcome that. You know, like now that Raleigh's getting into the 50s, and if he gets to 55, and then if he gets to 60, yeah, if Cal Raleigh hits 60 home runs this season, Femi and Jake, I think he wins MVP. I don't really think there's anything Judge can do at that point. If he hits 60, I think it's a wrap. So I think that's what, if you're betting Cal Raleigh or Cal Raleigh himself, I think that's the number that you're shooting for. But I just think what's the most incredible about this market is like, it actually feels like voters, like, in their heart of hearts, like they kind of want, they're rooting for Cal Raleigh. Like, they want him to win this thing. They want to vote for him. He's just obviously got to go out and continue to play well.
Yeah. And it's fresh and it's new. And I think oftentimes voters are kind of looking for, hey, like, if you give us a reason to go to somebody else, we'll take that. You know, give us the excuse. And Judge, this injury kind of gave them the excuse and opened their eyes up to saying, hey, maybe we should seriously consider Cal Raleigh with what he's been able to do. I know Raleigh had that slump in July and for like the early portion of August, but he has since come out of that. Like, the average is still not good, but he's hitting home runs damn near every night. So like, it kind of just like hides the fact that he's a below 250 batter, which sounds insane. Like, think about your childhood, like 20 years ago, like, oh, would somebody batting 250 win the MVP? Hell no. But in 2025, you can do that if you hit 60 home runs. I think right now, like, if I had no money into the market, because I have like a little bit of Judge putting some parlays, I'm not like sweating it right now. Like, let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But if I had no money in it, for those of you listening and watching right now, I'd be more inclined to bet Cal Raleigh than I would Aaron Judge. It just feels like the momentum is kind of going in his favor. And I think the onus is now on Judge to steer it back to him. Like, if things just play out how they have been, Cal Raleigh's going to win the award as indicated by this poll. But Judge, he's a big-time guy, generational player, like one of the elites, the all-time greats. Like, he could definitely steal this thing, but I think he's going to really have to take control of it over the next about 2 to 3 weeks. Because once we get to like the final week or so, final 10 days of the season, I think people have just made their minds up, and there's nothing that could happen in that final 10 days that'll sway one person one way or the other. I think by then it'll probably all be settled. So the AL MVP, very interesting after not being interesting for the first half of the MLB season. What's also interesting, Jake, is the AL Cy Young. We don't need to bring up the National League Cy Young after last night. I know last night was a big night for you, unfortunately, for our guy Christopher Sanchez. He did not rise to the occasion. But in the American League Cy Young, we have a race. And it might not seem like it because in the AL MVP poll from MLB.com, Tarek Skubal is fifth. And it feels like in the minds of a lot of people, Skubal's just going to win again. It's his award. But when you look at the numbers, Skubal and Boston Red Sox Garrett Crochet are kind of neck and neck. And the betting market is starting to get there where Skubal, who was once, I want to say like a minus 1,000, minus 1,500 favorite, is now down to minus 125. You have Garrett Crochet on this surging Red Sox team at even money. He continues to stack really good outings together. You look at their numbers, pretty similar. Like, I think, Jake, with about 4.5 weeks left, it's going to come down to the final 4 or 5 starts with these two guys. I would put my money, if I had to, on Skubal because I think he's a better pitcher. But like, Crochet refuses to go away, man.
Yeah, he does. And like you said, he's been remarkably consistent too. And Skubal was minus 1,000 because he looked like he was in the MVP race. I mean, we all bet a little bit on him when Judge went on the injured list. That was really awesome. Yeah. Don't have to belabor that point. But Skubal looked like he was going to cruise to this, and Crochet was awesome. I mean, he's been, what, no more than 10-1 or so since the beginning of the season. Like, everybody knew that he was going to be in this race. I just don't think people knew how close it was going to be at the end of the day. And the thing is, too, Skubal stumbled a couple times. His last couple of starts, I mean, 7 innings, but 3 earned, 4 2/3, 4 earned, 7 innings, 3 earned. He hasn't been immaculate. And Crochet, for the most part, kind of has, and he's racking up a ton of strikeouts too, which that's the eye-popping number. Like, Skubal can go out there and get you double-digit strikeout games, but he doesn't always do that. So I think that's what's helped. I think you're absolutely right. I think this is going to come down to the wire. Honestly, though, Femi, I'm on the other side. I might be betting some Crochet because, I said this earlier in the summer too, Skubal over the last calendar year, this is far and away the most innings he's ever thrown in a 365-day span. He's a guy that dealt with a lot of injuries in his career. Last year was the first year he was really, truly healthy, and this year. And so it's just maybe his body is just not built up for this, and you're starting to see some of the wear and tear catch up to him from the last year.
Yeah, dude, that's PJ. How do you feel about this race? Because, like, I'm a little surprised that Jake said he would go with Garrett Crochet, who, like, yes, like, he also, like, you can talk about innings with him as well with what he was doing with the Chicago White Sox, but that might have been more like a financial thing. Didn't want to risk any injury there. But, I mean, Crochet, if he steals this award, it'd be pretty remarkable just based on, I think, in everyone's minds, it felt like Tarek Skubal is just going to win the American League Cy Young because he's the best pitcher in the American League.
Well, and it's interesting too, right? Because when Crochet was with the White Sox, it was kind of the same story with him too. About, you were wondering, could he go all this amount of innings? Yep. And he's done it really, really well. But he's everything Boston could have hoped for. And Jake's right, the consistency that Crochet has had, and obviously how Boston's played here, in the second half. And you look at their schedule coming up. I mean, he's going to start against the Orioles, and then he's got to start against Cleveland, and then you got one against the Athletics. So he's facing some pretty bad teams and some lineups that he can take advantage of. I will note that they do end the season against Detroit. So could you imagine if we have Crochet and Scooble to end the season, which could be awesome. Put it in the vein. I think you have to like Crochet, though, too, just because Boston is battling for a wild card spot, right? Detroit's in the post. I mean, they're up 10.5 games in the American League Central. Like, they're going to win that division. Boston, they're only one game up on the Yankees and Seattle for that top wild card spot. So they're going to have Crochet go every fifth day, maybe even towards the end of the season, every 4 days, right? Trying to get him as many starts as they can. Cora's going to let him go as long as he can. Whereas with Hinch and the Tigers, like, you're chilling with Scooble. You know, you obviously you want bigger things in October. That part of it, I think, is interesting too. I'm with Jake. If I had to make a bet, I would go with Crochet as well.
So here's what makes it fun. Is that right now, if you look at, once again, Fangraph's version of war, F4, Scooble has the lead. Like, Scooble's at just a little over 6 wins. Crochet's at a little over 5 wins. But if you look at some of, like, the runs allowed stuff, some of the more traditional numbers, that's where Crochet actually has the edge. And, like, that's the stuff that the voters usually gravitate towards. It's not, like, all the fit-based, like, wars and all that. It's usually, like, what actually happened, not what theoretically should have happened. So Crochet has a little bit of an edge, but Tarik Skubal so far has shown that he's a pretty big mountain to climb, and maybe Crochet can do it. On the other side, we'll wrap up with NL Rookie of the Year and some other NFL news and notes here on You Better You Bet.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Let's get back to You Better You Bet on the BetMGM Network.
Welcome back. This is You Better You Bet on a Tuesday on the BetMGM Network. Femi Abebe, PJ Glasser. We should go ahead and let you guys know, because 20 minutes from now, we'll be joined by ESPN's Herm Edwards to break down the National Football League. But 1 hour from now, we'll be giving out all of our bets tonight in the world of sports, and also this weekend, because I'm going to be off the rest of the week. So I'm going to be giving out my college football week one bets. And if you want to be betting sports tonight and into the weekend, make sure you're taking advantage of the cool promotions that our friends at BetMGM have to offer. BetMGM account holders will receive an any sport parlay boost token. Score a bigger payout if your wager with the parlay boost token hits. Tokens can be used on parlays and SGPs. Make it legendary with BetMGM. Download the BetMGM app and please gamble responsibly. We will get to all of some other news and notes, which Bill's just put into the chat right here. Bill, this was like from what, just recently, about 2 minutes ago, 3 minutes ago? Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer letting the media know that Michael Parsons would need a ramp-up program to get back out on the field, courtesy of The Athletic. So that's the case down there in Dallas. Figure that was the case. Get the deal done. I'll say this, PJ. I think it gets done on Friday. I'm saying it now. Friday. Yep. Okay. But I'm in Cabo. I'll be hanging out by the beach. And I don't even know if I'll get notifications. I don't know what the hell the Wi-Fi situation is going to be like. You know what? I should just throw my phone into the ocean, honestly. I think Friday, at some point, Parsons, 4 years, $165 million, whatever the hell it needs to be, and we'll all get on with our lives. So
when do you start
that's what we're
sweating
right now?
When do you start sweating, Femi? Like, if we get to next Tuesday, next Wednesday, like, at what point will you start being like, all right, Jerry, like, come on, Tuesday, okay?
Yeah, Tuesday, because like, as Shadi is saying, like, he needs to ramp up, and I don't know if he's going to be practicing if he doesn't have the contract. Now, he also doesn't want to miss game checks and just forfeit those, so maybe he says, all right, whatever, I'll come back to practice, and then the whole thing just kind of goes by the wayside, and we do this dance all again all over next year. But he needs to practice, man. like we say, deadlines make deal. The deadline's coming up here pretty soon, Jerry. Like, you know what you're gonna do. You're gonna sign this guy. He's too good of a player for you to like just put him on the tag for 2 more years and then just let it all play out. Like, just get him signed. Let's move on. Let's make up. And let's go out there and win some damn games in 2025, at least hopefully. But that's what's going on in the National Football League with Michael Parsons and the Dallas Cowboys. Let's get back to baseball with our baseball aficionado, Jay Kassan, here on You Better You Bet. In the last segment, if you missed it, we broke down the AL MVP, the AL Cy Young, two awards markets that we didn't think would be hotly contested late into the season. But hey, the long season, things happen, and they have happened with Cal Raleigh now a co-favorite with Aaron Judge and Garrett Crochet of the Red Sox on the heels of the Tigers' Tarek Skubal. But an award market where it's close because nobody's good, that's over in the National League with the NL Rookie of the Year, the bane of our existence. It's like it feels like we're deja vu with the AL Rookie of the Year last season, with that race between Luis Gil, Colton Cowser, and Austin Wells, who is like pretty much like he who should not be named in my household, essentially. But the NL Rookie of the Year, as it stands right now over at BetMGM, your favorite is Cubs pitcher Cade Horton. Isaac Collins of the Brewers is plus 180. Drake Baldwin of the Braves is plus 200. Matt Shaw of the Cubs, 30-1. Augustin Ramirez, 35-1. But pretty much, according to the betting market, we have a three-horse race. Jake, is that how you see this awards market? Or could somebody that's a longer shot enter the chat in the final 4.5 weeks of the regular season?
I mean, I know what I want my answer to be. I want to say, yeah, Matt Shaw still has a chance at this thing because he's been awesome for the entire month of August. People keep tweeting me about it and asking about it, and his defense has been spectacular too. I just unfortunately think he dug himself too deep of a hole. It's too little, too late, so I guess it's just these three guys, but I also thought it was just Collins and Baldwin 2 weeks ago as well. So the more that those two continue to not be playing and be mid as well, and the more that Horton continues to be awesome, the problem is, as I always say, with a pitcher, Horton needs one bad outing. He has a Christopher Sanchez outing, and it's over, and he falls way back to the pack. It's also Horton, too. He has to be meticulous. He has to be perfect the rest of the way. He can't afford to stumble even once. Usually we say, once, twice, maybe if you stumble. That's usually the second time. That's where you exit. Horton's going to finish with like 120 innings. He's going to have fewer innings than Paul Skenes had last year when he won, and that was already an anomaly, but Skenes was just so damn awesome and had so much gravitas that he was able to win. Horton's barely, like, Horton hasn't even cleared 100 innings yet. It's August 26th. So if he's going to win, I'm not saying he can't win. He can absolutely win, and because this market is very stupid, all of these guys are very, very mediocre at best, and I'm being kind by saying that. He can definitely win because of that and because he has been awesome, but man, he has basically no wiggle room.
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't buy it with Cade Horton.
Yeah,
I really don't. I don't buy it. Like this just came out of nowhere, and he's been good, but then like he doesn't pitch, and then all of a sudden he becomes the favorite. Like what are we doing here? Like none of it makes sense to me. I do think that Matt Shaw still has a chance to win this one. Maybe I'm wish casting. Maybe I'm just like trying to like bring it into existence. But like, I mean, you look at what we talk about with the Rookie of the Year awards, wins above replacement is the compass. And right now, according to Baseball Reference, Matt Shaw is the most valuable rookie in the National League. Like at some point, and I know nobody's talking about him right now, so maybe I'm just like yelling into the abyss and nobody cares about this, but like at some point we will have to acknowledge if he continues to hit the ball like he has been in August, where he has an OPS over 900, like we're gonna have to acknowledge that this guy's just been better than everyone else. And if he's a 3-win player and Horton's at 1.8 at the end of the season, like does Horton win? Does that make sense to anyone? Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Like you can think that Horton's the guy, but like explain to me how Matt Shaw's 35 and Cade Horton's plus 140 and Matt Shaw is literally like a win and a half better than him according to Baseball Reference. Like that's where I just cannot get there with this betting market, and where I actually believe there is a betting opportunity as it stands right now. Like if you don't have anything, I'll advocate for it. I think that now's the time to bet Matt Shaw. I'll say it. And maybe I have egg on my face in 2 to 3 weeks or whatever, but I do think Matt Shaw is a bet right now. Like, I just don't see how these other guys are so far ahead of him in the betting market when the production says otherwise.
Oh, Femi.
I'm making the impassioned plea, Jake. I'm making
I'm with you. I would love sense. For you to be right, my friend. These tickets that we put in when he got called back up, what, 3 months ago, that'd be really great to be sitting on. I just feel like I'm getting set up for a Christopher Sanchez situation where I'm going to get my heart broken. I totally am with you. I think there is a case. I feel like some of these voters are going to go look at just the raw stats. It's kind of like the Cal Raleigh thing. Matt Shaw might end up hitting 250. And like Isaac Collins, for example, might finish with an 800 OPS, but he's hitting 300 and he's on the division winning team. And some of the voters might say, all right, well, we're going to give him the credit for that. I would love for you to be right. I do agree that I think the price is wrong on Matt Shaw, especially because, like you mentioned, all of this movement came on Cade Horton on a day he didn't even pitch. Like people are texting me, hey, you seen this odds move? And I'm like, did I miss something? Like, he didn't start today, right? And I'm looking for him everywhere. Nowhere to be found in any of the box scores, or specifically the Cubs box score, I guess. So I don't really understand what the move was about. I guess it was more anti-Baldwin and Collins. But, yeah, I think you're right, Femi. I do think that this is a wrong number on Matt Shaw if you are just getting into this market. I do think that's something you'd – I mean, he's had an OPS over 1,000 in his last 30 games. Since the All-Star break, he has been awesome. He's hitting 295, mm-hmm. OPS over 1,000. The defense has been legit as well. He steals bases, too. So, what the hell? Sure, I guess.
I mean, we're saying that we want to pick off good numbers, and PJ, I want to get your thoughts on this because, like what we're talking about here is like the mid-off of all mid-offs. Like, none of these guys are actually good, but it's, hey, one of them has to win the award by rule. Mm-hmm. You could get there with Isaac Collins. Like, if Isaac Collins wins, I would not bat an eye. I'd say, all right, yeah, like, he was on a team that won the division. He was impactful. But, like, the Cade Horton stuff, to me, that's where I'm just like this is Fugazi. Like, it's out of nowhere. It makes no sense whatsoever. I'm curious to get your thoughts between Collins, Baldwin, Horton, and maybe even Matt Shaw, PJ.
Well, that's where I was going to go is I don't really know who to bet in this award, but the guy I would not bet is Cade Horton. That's the guy I wouldn't bet, especially at that price. I mean, Jake said it. Like, he got steam Sunday morning. Family, we get a text from somebody saying, go bet Cade Horton 5-1. I look up, he's +1. I'm like, what happened? You know, so all this steam that came in on him. And to Jake's point, you know, when you're a pitcher in the rookie of the year market, you have to be perfect. And Cade Horton's been unbelievable in his last 7 starts. He's only given up 2 runs in his last, like, 31 innings pitched, right? 36 innings pitched. So, I mean, the guy's been unbelievable. At some point, you think he's probably going to get roughed up. And when he does, it's just going to be tough for him to make up that kind of ground. So, Femi, I mean, you said it. You can really make a case for, Shaw, Collins, Baldwin if you wanted. Horton, I mean, this just seems like you really, really missed the boat. And if you're getting in on this price, you need this guy to continue to be as good as he has been. And I just don't know if that's going to continue. So I wish I could give you an answer. I'll root for Matt Shaw with you guys because you're invested. I don't know who to bet in this market, but I would not bet Cade Horton. That's the guy I would stay away from.
Yeah, and like, I think Cade Horton needs to continue the dominance that he's been doing over the last 6 weeks. How likely is that? That's where I sit here because, and we have this news that just came out about an hour ago, like Texas Rangers Nathan Eovaldi out for the rest of the season. Like, that was the whole thing with Eovaldi and seeing his AL Cy Young price start to come down a little bit about a month ago. And everyone's like, hey, like, look at Eovaldi. He's not giving up any earned runs. And then all of a sudden he starts giving up earned runs because that's what pitchers do. You're not going to be like, hey, I give up only one earned run for 8 straight weeks. Like, that's just not realistic. It's not realistic whatsoever. So I would expect a little bit of Cade Horton regression. And when that regression hits, we're going to go right back to these position players. If it's not Matt Shaw, and like, hey, it doesn't have to be. It could be Isaac Collins of the Milwaukee Brewers. It could even be Drake Baldwin of the Atlanta Braves, who at one point felt like he was going to be the guy that grabs control of this award, sitting as like a -250 favorite, who you can now get at +200. It continues to be fluid. I think you need to be checking the box scores all throughout these games every single night. And once you do that, take a look at some of the opportunities at a plus money price that you can bet, build up a portfolio, and hopefully you profit. But as it stands right now, I am taking a stance against the favorite, Cade Horton of the Chicago Cubs. I don't even think he's the most valuable rookie on his own damn team. That does it for hour number 3 here on You Better You Bet. On the other side, ESPN's Herm Edwards joins us here on You Better You Bet. Talk some National Football League on a Tuesday.
We'll be right back with You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas.